The final case for argument this morning is in the appeal from the decision of the Yankton County Commission. Ms. Nora Kane for the appellant, Yankton Land and Cattle Company. And for the appellees would be Mr. James Zabrisk, who will be arguing first for 10 minutes, I understand, sir. And then Mr. Robert L. Chavis, Yankton County State's Attorney, would be for 10 minutes, correct, sir? Ms. Kane, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel, Madam Clerk. My name is Nora Kane, and I represent Yankton Land and Cattle in this fifth level of appeals from the issuance of a building permit issued April 19th, 2002. I did provide the court a chronology of the events. The appeal is somewhat date-driven because it is our first argument on appeal that the state's attorney and Guy Larson incorrectly attempted to appeal from the Board of Adjustment to the County Commission. And as long as I'm speaking about dates, I noticed this morning on page 9 of the appellant's brief, the first full paragraph reads that the Board of Adjustment decision was April 16th. It was not. It was May 28th. The predecessor in interest to the feedlot and the assignor of the building permit is Larry Reichen. Larry Reichen and his father operated the feedlot and sale barn, which is north of Yankton and just a little west off Highway 81. For many years before the DENR, the Department of Environmental Natural Resources, stepped in and told them that their waste facilities were no longer up to spec, issued a cease and desist order and told them they had to fix it or close down the feed yard. Larry Reichen employed Eisenbrown Engineering of Yankton, South Dakota to implement a plan to do this. Todd Van Manen was the primary engineer on the project, and when Todd was finished with the plan, Mr. Reichen approached the Tom Fiddler, the Yankton County Zoning Administrator, and applied for a building permit. At that precise moment in time, this court was considering the challenge to the constitutionality of the Yankton County Zoning Ordinance, and as you know, struck that down as unconstitutional for not having a comprehensive plan in place. It is not under that ordinance that this appeal is brought or that the permit was applied for. A temporary zoning ordinance was came into being in December of 2001, and it is that document, Exhibit 1, under which the appeal is brought. The opponents to the building permit were allowed to and did attend an April 16th meeting at which Mr. Fiddler, because of this pending appeal and his relative inexperience with zoning, had asked the County Commission for some assistance. It was a pretty big project, and he was concerned. The Planning Commission and the County Commission, sitting as the Board of Adjustment, met with the public and with Tom Fiddler on April 16th. Michael Marlowe was Larry Reichen's attorney and was present that evening. Guy Larson, the appellant, was allowed to, and other citizens who had complaints about the permit were there and did present their complaints. The boards at the close of this meeting recommended that Tom Fiddler issue the building permit. 3 days later he did, April 19th. Guy Larson appeals to the Planning Commission from that decision. He's heard on May 7th. His appeal is denied. He appeals to the Board of Adjustment. His appeal is denied. 1 year ago yesterday is when we assert he made the fatal procedural flaw. He appealed to the County Commission, and he did so under a provision of the temporary zoning ordinance, which said that was the next step that you took. However, SDCL 11-2-61 states, provides that the sole avenue of appeal from a Board of Adjustment decision is to the Circuit Court.
It doesn't use the word sole.
It doesn't, but it says that the petition shall be presented. And I think the court has addressed a similar case based upon Epley's argument that may versus shall in the statute in Brown versus Douglas County School District. The Epley failed to timely file a notice of review. It just filed a statement of issues that they wanted heard. It was past the time, the 20 days that the notice of review has to be filed, and this court held that it was a jurisdictional flaw and that Pelley was not allowed to present those arguments. It's a 2002, I do have the site, 2002 SD 92. already answered that. The other, so to bolster that argument that this was a sole avenue of appeal is the 2003 legislature amended 11261 to allow for an appeal from the Board of Adjustment to either the County Commission or the Circuit Court. This court has stated repeatedly that a change to a statute is presumed to change existing law. There is, in our mind, is our position that there's absolutely no question that the Circuit Court was divested of subject matter jurisdiction, and therefore so is this court. Our appeal to you does not confer jurisdiction upon you to consider the merits, and it is our position that this must be reversed and remanded for dismissal for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. An additional subject matter jurisdiction issue that was presented to the Circuit Court and not argued in the brief, but it's also the law that subject matter jurisdiction may be raised at any time. Mr. Chavis purports to act under Chapter 7-8 in the state's attorney's appeal, and under that chapter, 15 aggrieved citizens must bring a petition to him, and then he gets to decide whether he's going to bring the appeal on behalf of the county. We have never, to this day, never seen that petition. It's never been served on my client. We complained about that to Judge Anderson, and he said to Mr. Chavis, get me that petition. In his memorandum opinion, he says he got it, and he says it was filed with auditor, but we still don't have it. And we have no idea whether these 15 citizens even live in Yankton County, let alone whether they're aggrieved. The statutes provide that they can't just assert that they are aggrieved because they're Yankton County citizens. They have to have something that's personal to them. We don't know who they are. We know Guy Larson is one. That is it. So that's the second basis that we assert there is no subject matter jurisdiction for this appeal. If you disagree and choose to address the merits, our second issue on appeal is that the trial court erred when it concluded that the feedlot, we do not dispute that it's a non-conforming use. It is. But when the trial court concluded that the building permit constituted an expansion of that existing use, that was an error as a matter of fact and as a matter of law. The court states in its finding of fact number 15 that no questions were asked regarding the capacity of the feed yard during Larry Reichen's time out there. I've cited in our briefs the question that was put to Mike Marlowe, who, as I told you a few minutes ago, was representing Larry Reichen. They had the aerial photographs that Mr. Chavis personally went out and took before the building permit was even issued. There were exhaustive discussions that evening and at each subsequent meeting about what that feed yard was, how many cattle were out there, et cetera, et cetera. But more importantly, the reason that they sought the building permit wasn't to put more cattle out there. This isn't like Cordell, where the swine operators sought to change from farrow to feeder, from farrow to finish, which added, I think, about 4,000 head of pigs, and also changed the amount of time that the pigs are out there. Obviously, farrow to feeder is a shorter amount of time. Farrow to finish is several months. What we sought with this building permit was simply to comply with the state law to upgrade these waste facilities. The temporary zoning ordinance requires us to be in compliance with state law. State law required that we do it or we had to shut down. The law, and I've cited this in our briefs also, that when repairs are required by a higher state or federal law, that the ordinance cannot prevent them from undergoing the repairs, and the repairs cannot constitute an expansion of the existing use.
You know, if this was just a repair, help me with the argument that what's been raised about the I'm not sure if it was the Board of Adjustment or the Planning Commission or which one it was, but when they entered into that discussion about a structure and expanding a structure so they could get to the feed yard and all that business, it looks like they were trying to expand the zoning ordinance. But if this in fact was simply a repair, why were they engaged in that exercise?
I don't know, and I've never understood the argument that has been put forth by the Yankton County State's Attorney. The definition of building includes structure, and structure includes animal waste facility. And I said that backwards. An animal waste facility is defined as a structure. I don't think they ever had to engage in that discussion to get where they were. I think it is a reflection on the inexperience of those boards in dealing with zoning. April 16th was the night they engaged in that discussion, and they were not engaged in their official capacity. They were in an advisory capacity to Mr. Fidler. Judge Anderson agreed that night was simply an advisory capacity. And the appellees complain about this constantly, but the temporary zoning ordinance provides that the county commission can provide any help to the zoning administrator that they think he needs.
Well, Judge Anderson also, though, believed that they erred in that regard. Did he not? I think his opinion indicated that they had expanded. They were trying to expand it beyond what was permitted.
I don't think that that's the gravamen of his opinion. I do agree with you that there's language in there that talks about what they did that night. I think the problem is just another reflection of the problems with the zoning ordinances as they're written in this county. Because they limit it to a building, there's no discussion of a use. If I have a pasture out there that became a non-conforming use under the zoning ordinance, how do we ever talk about a building? There isn't one out there. It's their fault for leaving out the use of the land. Land is used in many ways. If you had a billboard up that became non-conforming after a zoning ordinance, it's not a building. I don't believe it's a structure under this ordinance. So you could never change it, you could never paint it.
Well, then tell us exactly what they were going to do. I mean, what's the before and after picture of this entire location?
And I'm not going to be much help on the technical aspects of that. Those are in Exhibits 4 and 5. They had to reconfigure the pens somewhat so they could put in the new holding ponds and the new waste facility. The state requires that when you do that, when Todd Van Manen proposed that plan, that he had to go by the possible amount of drainage in that area. How much, if every square inch was being drained, how much do we need? And that has always caused a problem with Guy Larson and the other citizens complaining. They assumed that meant in the plan, when he put what the maximum capacity would be on that land, they all assumed that meant that's how many head of cattle were going to be out there. Never been the case.
Well, it looked to me from the oral or the aerial photographs like everything's drained to the south. Is that right?
South, and Mr. Chavis, maybe he was up in the plane. He may be able to help you more with that. In my mind, it's south and a little to the east. Those weren't, there had apparently been a complaint, there had been some runoff from the existing facility, and it was that complaint that triggered all of this. They came out, they looked, and they said, and stop, right now, and fix it or shut down. And in the appellee's brief, they argue, oh, these were always sufficient. This was always good enough for Mr. Reich, and why did they have to change? Well, they had to change because the state came out and told them they had to. Does that help? Does that leave you with any question?
No, thank you.
So the intent behind it was never to increase the number of head of cattle.
Absolutely not. And that's where the line is drawn between this case and Cordell versus Codington County, because they were seeking to change the character of the use. I cited cases in my reply brief, I believe, that get into that more about how you make the distinction whether the repair changes the character of the existing use or merely recognizes and protects the existing use. That's all they wanted to do out here was to comply with the state law. Mr. Heine, who's one of the principals in Yankton Land and Cattle, testified, has no plans to try and reach that capacity that's in the permit. He would have to have cattle in the alleyways too, and not just in the pens to reach that, because it was based on drainage area. But Judge Anderson also erred by discounting the. If you don't want to believe Larry Reichen, and if you don't want to believe Mr. Heine, and you want to know how many cattle could you have out there before, the best measurement of that is how much feed bunk space did you have? How many cattle could you feed? And that is in the record that the maximum was 8,601. Todd's plan calls for less than that, just slightly over 7,000 head. I don't believe it's in the record. I don't believe Mr. Heine ever testified to the number that he wants. It certainly isn't 2,500, which is what Judge Anderson limited him to. That was also a mistake. There was a huge misunderstanding about Larry Reichen's cattle and the custom-fed cattle. Feed yard was a hotel for cattle. And all the questions that were put to Larry Reichen, he kept saying, my cattle? Mine? You mean mine? Mr. Shave said, yes, yours, 2,500. That was his number. The custom-fed cattle, when Mr. Dahman asked him on cross-examination how many, he said 10,000. So Michael Marlowe told the commissions on April 16th, 10,000. The number has never wavered. I think it was simply that they have never understood that that permit was not seeking to expand the head of cattle out there. It was seeking to repair the animal waste facilities.
You know, if all that's true, why are you even appealing? Let's set aside a moment the finding of fact on the 2,500. I can see why you would feel aggrieved from that. But as the owner of this facility or the successor, why are you even appealing it? It seems to me that Judge Anderson effectively ruled in your favor on everything, probably, except for the 2,500 head limitation.
That's huge to my client. Okay. That's huge. And I don't think it's in the record what he wants out there. And so I don't know if it's fair to tell you what he wants, but it's more than 2,500. And it makes a huge difference in the risk of the capital that he's laying out, whether there's 2,500 or not. There's strength in numbers, but he's not seeking to go over the number that we submit should probably be set by Todd's plan at 7,060, which is less than the lineal feed bunk capacity is now. There is no dispute about the 6,006 head in the sale barn. They're generally there just for a day or two before a sale.
Where do you get that number, 7,060? Can you give me a transcript site or something?
I can tell you it's between Exhibit 4 and 5.
So it's a capacity number then?
Yes.
Well, you know you've got a problem with capacity, don't you, on historical use? The number that you want the limitation to be 7,060, is that right?
Yes.
But that's based on capacity, not historical use.
Historical use is more. Historical use is 10,000, if you believe Larry Reichen's testimony, and it's 8,000, 6,001 if you look at feed bunk capacity. So I disagree, Judge Zinter, that there's a problem with historical use. Mike Marlowe said it was more than 10,000 there at the Planning Commission. And I'm relying on the number that Larry Reichen testified to at trial at 10,000. And that's what I'm saying. If you want to just discount that, if you don't want to believe Larry Reichen or his attorney, I think the feed bunk capacity is the best evidence of historical capacity. There's no rhyme or reason in spending the money to put those. They're not cheap plywood bunks, they're concrete, and they cost a lot of money to put out there, and they have room for 8,601 head animals to eat.
Are we to go by historical use or historical capacity?
Use.
So then Judge Anderson's finding of fact is clearly erroneous in your opinion?
Absolutely. Finding of fact number 15 is clearly erroneous because he says that no questions were ever asked on April 16th. I cited you to I believe it's Exhibit 10 is the transcript of April 16th. I might be wrong on that number. I can check for you when Appellee's arguing. Exhibit 24 is clearly, or I'm sorry, finding of fact 24 is clearly erroneous because there he states that the waste system was always adequate for Larry Reichen. The DNR found to the contrary and told him to shut down. Finding fact 29 is clearly erroneous because Judge Anderson concluded that the granting of the permit expanded the non-conforming use. 56 is clearly erroneous because he found that under the temporary zoning ordinance, we had to show that we were grandfathered in at a certain number, and the temporary zoning ordinance has no such provision. I've read it over and over and over to try and find where he saw that it's not there.
Before you quit, which section of the ordinance applies? I see there's one provision for land, one for structures, one for land and structures together. Is that the one that you would contend applies?
Yes.
That would be 1509. That's the combination section.
I believe so, and this goes back to what I said earlier. I think there's an error where there's not a discussion of just use of the land. Because in my mind, when I read this ordinance, it's always talking about something being on it. And fences and walls and doors and yards. And I think that the feedlot doesn't fit precisely. The sale barn does, but the feedlot doesn't fit precisely into any of those categories.
Give me the numbers of your findings of fact and conclusions of law that you claim are, or findings of fact that you claim are clearly erroneous.
The
I have 29 and 56, so skip those.
Add 15 and 24. In 57, I hadn't discussed yet, very briefly. In 57, he stated the burden of proof was on Riken. In Coyote Flats, paragraph 8, it states that the burden is on the appellant to show that our historical use was less. That's not what Coyote Flats says. The Coyote Flats just says that the burden is upon the person who's appealing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Mr. Abreski, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court and counsel. Your Honor, I'd like to first bring up this issue about jurisdiction, whether or not the trial court has jurisdiction. First of all, South Dakota Code sections 11-2-28, 28.1 and 11-2-30 provide that any requested change in zoning with regard to a landowner has to eventually go to the county commission for approval or disapproval. And those, I believe those statutes control. The second part of that is if you don't agree with those statutes, then the appeal made to the county commission was done exactly 30 days after the Board of Adjustment decision was made. And the Board of Adjustment in this case is exactly the same membership as the county commission. So if it was done erroneously, there was no prejudice to the Heine brothers because of the appeal that was made within time, perhaps to the wrong body if that's the way the court might see it. But at least it was made.
30 days to the court?
Sorry?
Was it 30 days to the court from
yes.
the adjustment board?
Yes, ma'am. But it was made to, based on a county commission ruling. The appeal was made from a county commission ruling, but it was still within 30 days from the time. It was May 28th, the Board of Adjustment made their, denied the appeal.
And you brought it by complaint as opposed to 11-262, which would be a petition with a writ of certiori.
It was not, no, it was the 15 taxpayer appeals, what it was. But there was a 30-day period. He was within, the petitioners were well within the time, even if they sent it to the wrong body. So there was no prejudice to the Heine brothers as a result of it.
Any different standard of review on one case when it's a complaint as opposed to an appeal under 11-262? Is there a different process?
Not that I know of. I think it's still clearly erroneous factual. And then I understand the court can disregard any legal conclusions by the trial court.
While you're on that, where are these other 15 taxpayers? Where on the record, I should say, can we find the names of these people?
I don't know that they're in the record, Your Honor, but the petition was filed with the county auditor, according to Judge Anderson. I've never seen the petition myself, but he says that it was filed with the county auditor. If the Heine brothers wanted it, they could certainly have gone to the auditor's office and picked it up. But they claim it was never given to them. I don't know. I'm sure that it was never given to them. But they could have obtained it had they wanted to at any time.
And that's where the statute designates you file it's with the auditor, not the clerk of courts?
I don't even know that, Your Honor. I can't answer that with certainty.
Okay.
I wasn't in on that part of it. I was brought in much later in this case to help out with the appeal. Secondly, in regard to the amount of cattle, I think what was Judge Justice Zinner, I think, said you got everything you wanted except the number of head of cattle. What the Heine brothers are talking about is an expanded use of a non-conforming use. They want to expand it through the back door, basically. And what they're doing is saying, well, we're just going on capacity. But the fact is, if they get a 7,000 head capacity, that's what they'll feed. And this is within 3 miles of the city of Yankton, which is an absolutely forbidden use under the temporary zoning ordinance of the county. Yet they're trying to come in through the back door and say, well, we're just doing by capacity. But why would they appeal it? That's a good question. Why would they appeal it if they were allowed 2,500 head? And that's a different class of feeding operation, according to their zoning ordinance. What they want is I think it's a Class A, up to 7,000 head. And they want to plant it right next to the city of Yankton. Of course, there are people objecting to it. They would, naturally. And
Mr. Amoresco, there's nothing in the building permit or the permit application that talks about any kind of an expansion. I mean, the documents only say that this is a DNR repair issue. That's all these documents indicate.
Well, at the planning and zoning meeting, as well as the Board of Adjustment meeting, excuse me, the District 3 planning guy, Brian McGinnis, actually gave the commission, the boards, some new terminology called footprint that appears nowhere in the zoning ordinance. And what he said a footprint was, and they adopted this, was not just the building, but the building would be expanded to include all of the yards and the feed pens. And in other words, they included as their footprint everything that was owned, all the land that was owned by Riken, which then would allow an expansion of a non-conforming use. That was a fiction they used.
Well, then let me ask you this. Why are you here? Because Judge Anderson limited it to 2,500 head. So,
well, we're here to respond to them.
Well, you've also noticed and reviewed.
Pardon?
You've also filed a notice of review.
Well, that's Mr. Chavis's department. That's not mine. There are some parts of the decision that he disagreed with, and he wanted to have those reviewed while we were here.
So you're happy with the permit being issued as long as it's limited to 2,500?
Well, not exactly happy, but happier, I'd say, than we would be if it was 7,000 or more. And I think they would have tried to get more had they been able to. Well, and I think those Justice Sabres who asked about capacity versus actual use, I think that's what they're trying to say. Why would they want to expand the capacity if they're not going to use it? I mean, they're fighting like mad, spending a lot of money to increase the capacity of the feed yard to at least 7,000 or more. And the fact is that they want to use that capacity. They're saying we're not going to use that much, but why would they fight for it? That's what they're saying now. There's no real reason.
No, aren't they saying that their historical use is up around 7,000 or 8,000 or 10,000, and now it's going to be limited to 2,500?
That's what they're saying. But the testimony is conflicting, and if you'll read the transcript on Larry Riken's testimony, there are times when he said, well, 10,000, other times when he said, no, it's 2,500 or less, between 2,000 and 4,000. Then he said, I think he said two-thirds of those were kept off of the lot anyhow. I kept them somewhere else.
Who had the burden of proof on the historical use?
I would say that the Heine brothers do.
Do you have anything to support that?
Well, they're asserting it. That's the only thing I would say. I don't have any authority to support it, but since they're asserting it, I would imagine there's plenty of authority saying that they have the burden.
Was that an issue before it got to the court?
The historical use?
Mm-hmm.
No. Not that I know of.
So that was really, the trial court is the first body that really talked about historical use.
I think that's true.
Finding?
Because Mr. Chavis elicited a lot of testimony from Larry Riken about historic use. The fact is, Larry Riken couldn't remember how many cattle he had used at any one time or another. And that'll be pretty clear if you read the transcript. We took his deposition, I remember, the same thing happened there.
Is it a non-essential finding then? If it wasn't an issue before it came to this court, is it a non-essential finding? Is it just illusory, or is it just
No, I think it was an issue. I think it was an issue in the trial court, Your Honor. No, not before it got here, but it was an issue in the trial court because there was a ton of testimony about historical use during the trial and at deposition before that. So far as I want to say one more thing about the change of statute. I forget, 11261, was that the correct one?
I want to ask a little more about that, of why the trial court was the first body that made the decision on historical use. Is that how the zoning laws are set up, that the trial court makes those decisions as opposed to the initial body that reviews this?
Justice Mayor Henry, I don't believe that's how it's set up, but I don't believe the Board of Adjustment or the Planning and Zoning Commission ever thought about it. They just granted the permit.
Was it ever requested that it be remanded at that level, trial court level, to remand it? Because the trial court directed the decision and made the decision.
They did, but I don't think anybody requested it be remanded. I just think that our request was that they deny the petitioners. About the statute saying that there was a change of statute, therefore there must not have been an existing right of appeal to the county commission. Well, the statutes I cited, 11-228 at C, I think take care of that. But in addition, what they're talking about is House Bill 1281. And the thrust of that House bill, I don't know if the court's familiar with it, but it says that you can no longer do a referendum on a county commission decision. And I think that was a response to the two decisions by this court in Bonham County and Hudson County, when you said that they do have to have a referendum. And that bill was a reference to that, a response to it.
Your time has expired, Mr. Everest.
Pardon?
Thank you. Minutes goes fast.
You don't care to venture a question or give an opinion as to the constitutionality of that act in view of the Constitution?
No, it's constitutional because the county referendum is set up by statute, not by the Constitution. So therefore, the legislature has the right to change it, but we're referring that bill to it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Everest. Mr. Chavez, you have 10 minutes, sir.
My name is Bob Chavez, and I'm the Lincoln County State's Attorney.
I just want to ask you a preliminary matter so I can get this out of the way. Were there 15 taxpayers?
Your Honor, in fact, there were
more than... As an officer of the court, can you tell us that there were?
As an officer of the court, I can tell you that we had more than 15. The petition had more than 15 taxpayers. Judge Anderson, at the preliminary injunction hearing, asked to see it. The county auditor had it. We got the original. He reviewed it. He wanted a copy filed, and he gave the original back to her. So I don't understand the argument. Clearly, there were 15 taxpayers. And this action was brought pursuant to SDCL 7-828, which is a taxpayer lawsuit, and not pursuant to 11-261, which I think is discretionary from a Board of Adjustment. I want to go back over just a few things that Ms. Kane said.
What is the standard of review different? One comes in as a complaint, and one comes
I think under 11-262, you use a writ of certiorari. Mm-hmm. Under a taxpayer lawsuit, it's a complaint.
And a writ of certiorari has totally different standards.
I think so. But I think the procedure utilized is appropriate under the circumstances, and I think was properly utilized, although I take issue with some of the decisions of Judge Anderson. Ms. Kane mentioned something about the April 16th joint meeting and the number of cattle that were talked about. Numbers ranged from 20,000 to 10,000 historically, but Judge Anderson's comment, and I think was taken out of context in his memorandum decision, and I had it tabbed, said there was no information as of the date of the enactment of the zoning ordinance. Historical data doesn't make any difference because it's a non-conforming use, so the issue is what was the non-conformity as of the date of the temporary zoning ordinance, which is December 21st, 2001. And that is set forth in his memorandum decision. So that's just a mistake on the part of Ms. Kane, if I could point that out to the court in my brief time. Page 3, paragraph 3, said no questions were asked nor information received concerning the actual number of livestock that had been maintained for feeding on the premises at that time or at the time when the zoning code was adopted on December 21st, 2001. So, and I think Brown County versus Mindiger also puts the burden of proof on the individual seeking to take advantage of the grandfather provision to provide the numbers as of the date of the enactment of the zoning ordinance. And I think that was upheld in WEGNER Wigner versus Ballard, where the court once again said we have to strictly construe these non-conforming uses. And I think that that's the law and that's the standard. Larry Reichen, they talked about him. Larry Reichen was a straw person. He didn't read the permit. He didn't read the application. It was prepared. He signed it. And that was the end of it. He testified at the hearing under cross-examination that at times he had had up to 10,000 head of cattle on his property. Sale barn, livestock. But on cross, on redirect, he said never for feeding purposes. And that's in the transcript. He has never had 10,000 head of cattle for feeding purposes. What's the average for the last 5 years, Mr. Reichen? 4,000 for feeding purposes. Of those, how much was on your property? About a third. High side, 2,000, 2,500. And that's where Judge Anderson came up with that number, I think. So,
what about Ms. Kane's suggestion that really there was a misunderstanding about who owned them as opposed to where they were?
Your Honor, the burden is on the proponent to prove. The cattle company stands in the shoes of Larry Reichen. They've got the burden of proof, not me. I don't think there was a misunderstanding. He said he and his father fed cattle a little bit. He said he bought his cattle from North Dakota, brought them back to South Dakota, put a third in the feed lot, two-thirds on farm fields. That's his average. So I don't think that was a misunderstanding. In any event, I don't believe it's my burden of proof to tell the appellants how to meet the grandfather requirement. I've got 4 minutes. Just real quick, we take issue with whether or not the court erred in not remanding the matter back with instructions to revoke the permit ab initio. The court found, they conceded, it's a non-conforming use. The court found that the building permit would allow a massive expansion of the then existing operation contrary to the zoning ordinance. The court found that the numbers relied upon was false and inaccurate. If you look at Exhibit 4 and Exhibit 5.
Just a minute, I got to interrupt you right away, because with Judge Anderson's restrictions, as I read the record, there's no expansion.
But if he found the permit was illegally issued, does he have an option except to send it back to be revoked, as in Cordell County? Well, I think Cordell. I can't see without my glasses.
So that's the second question, but with his restrictions, as I see this, there's no expansion. Is that correct?
With his restrictions, there is no expansion. The question is whether or not he permitted the construction, which would authorize the expansion of a non-conforming use. Gary Heine testified he had no plans to increase the level, but he also admitted that he could if he wanted to. And you don't spend $500,000 to build this massive lagoon and 11 sedimentation basins and space for about 10,000 head of animals with no plans to fill those pens. It's not economically feasible.
If I understand correctly, you're suggesting that the place be basically shut down except for the sale barn.
I'm suggesting that the law requires that except the sale barn.
All right.
And that's under the case law that I've read, and I think clearly it's pursuant to the temporary zoning ordinance, which says a non-conforming use cannot be expanded, added on to, but the county commission and the planning commission, in an effort to get around this problem, and the court can figure that out, they redefined the definition of building to include yards, corrals, pastures, and just basically opened up 120 acres of land to be used in the feeding operation if they so desire. And that was an improper amendment contrary to the zoning ordinance. And it was clearly, if you read the minutes of that meeting, and I was not there, it's an attempt, and they make it known it's an attempt to avoid undue hardship. Well, there's no undue hardship because construction had not begun. And DENR cannot compel anyone to commit a law, and a violation of the zoning ordinance is illegal. So I think that was the first issue that I raised in my notice of review. I also asked for an injunction, and I think clearly the courts held that an injunction is the only adequate remedy for a violation of the zoning ordinance. And I think that was a mistake in not doing that, and I think that was contrary to the law. And then the grandfather provision, who's got the burden of proof? Larry Reichen. He didn't know the number of head of cattle he had at any time. He didn't know the pen capacity. The pen capacity and the animals that he had over the years had no comparison relationship to the engineer's drawing. By the contract, the engineer was required to get that data from Larry Reichen. He didn't do it. The feed bunk space doesn't make a bit of difference because Larry Reichen testified and the engineer admitted that the feed bunk space does not make any difference as to the actual number of cattle he had on feed. So the fact that he had feed bunk space is not controlling. And basically, as far as the grandfather provision, why would Larry Reichen burn his records? He burned his records. He had no records. And this is just before the transfer. Why would he do that? He had counsel present. And so I can only surmise that the records burned would not support anybody's position as to the number of head of cattle. And that's in the transcript. So basically, Your Honor, may it please the court, clearly the decision was arbitrary and capricious. The court gives deference to the findings of fact. And the commissions relied upon false information. If you read the transcript of the commissioners, they clearly did not understand what was going on. One said he didn't know but didn't care, basically. That's Commissioner Hensler. John Simple basically said he just didn't know much about it. Tamasia said the building being expanded was no building. So the information relied upon was clearly false, and the judge was right as to that.
Your time has expired, counsel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Kane, you have 10 minutes.
In the trial transcript, Larry Reichen talks about purchasing 2,500 head of cattle in North Dakota. His cattle. There's no hotel cattle being talked about there. The 2,500 are cattle owned strictly by Larry Reichen. This is a custom feed lot. The state's attorney simply misunderstood the testimony he was hearing. I don't know anything about how the records burned up. In his deposition, Larry Reichen testified they'd burned up. That's all we know about it. If he knows more about it, it's not in the record. I was there during the deposition. There was no probing about when this fire occurred and when they were burned. It's an insinuation that it was done to do with the case, and as far as I know, that is not true.
What about the fact that the burden of proof is with your client? If the numbers and the use at the time the zoning ordinance was passed.
I think that would be true if we were in a Cordell situation where we were asking to add animals. We never asked to add animals. We asked to upgrade the waste facility. The state requires that the plan accommodate the maximum head possible on the ground. The state doesn't ask historical capacity. And if the burden is on us, cited in Justice Martin's dissent, or Judge Martin's dissent in Schrank, that even if the burden is upon us, it's not by a preponderance of the evidence, and that's also in Coyote Flats at paragraph 16. If Larry Reichen says 10,000 and the feed bunks say 8,000+, and we don't have a preponderance of the evidence standard, I submit that we did meet it. I represent lots of cattlemen, and there isn't one out there who could produce the records to me to show me the historical capacity. And now they're learning that they have to with these zoning laws coming into effect. But it's not the way they do business, and there was no reason to keep it.
On the other hand, I know a lot of cattlemen, and everybody knows basically what kind of herd they have. I mean, they can tell you in round figures. And as I understand it, the record here, he's saying it was about 4,000 head, and part of them were on feedlot and part of them were not.
Well, again, Justice Center, he's talking about his own cattle. If you read that transcript, he keeps saying, my cattle? Yes. And then he answers the question. When he's asked how many cattle were on the feed yard, he says 10,000. It's my cattle where he limits the number. And I agree with you that most cattlemen can talk about their own herd. We're not talking about this herd. We're talking about the hotel. And the terms that I'm used to are one-time capacity. How many can you put out there? It's not historical use. It's how many can you? And you know that's driven by the market, and it's not always full. And if we're going to limit them to the date the ordinance goes into effect, December 21st, that's how many animals you get out there. Well, what if it was 1984 and nobody had any cattle on feed because they all lost so much money? It simply doesn't make sense to limit it to one date and time. You have to look at historical use and come up with some kind of an average. The best that they could do here was 10,000. And I really invite you to look at that transcript and see how Larry Ripken was making sure he understood the question, that it was about his cattle and not about all the cattle in the feed yard. Justice Meyer-Henry, you're correct. There's a different standard of review. Hamerly discusses that in some detail. And Hamerly also supports our argument that the judge had no right to send it back with a number on it. This court held in Hamerly that the circuit court is without jurisdiction to order a zoning authority how to comply with its own ordinance. And that's essentially what he did when he said you have to write this into the permit, that it's not exceeding the prior use, and also to set the number. Hamerly prevents both. As far as the injunction, Guy Larson and the Yankton County State's Attorney shot themselves in the foot by bringing this appeal under Chapter 7-8. Because 7-8 says that the exclusive remedy is appeal. You can't get an injunction. 7-8-32 states that.
So what's the remedy then? A declaration by the court that's supposed to be followed?
Well, I submit that you can't get there through 7-8. That's the subject matter jurisdiction argument. It had to be brought under 11-2. He brought it under 7-8, and so he's limited to the appeal. He cannot get an injunction. And furthermore, he's not the zoning authority. He's not here representing the county commission, the Board of Adjustment, or the Planning Commission. He's here representing 15 unnamed taxpayers, 14 unnamed taxpayers. Guy Larson is named. That's their second notice of review issue. The third goes back to the burden. I think we've discussed that. The first notice of review issue was that it should have been sent back void. From the beginning, but that presupposes that this permit authorizes a change in an existing use. And I feel like a broken record. I won't go back into that anymore. It's our position. We never sought it. We don't seek it. It was a state-mandated repair that we undertook. The law is clear that an ordinance can't shut you down because you're complying with the state or the federal law that tells you you have to go back in there and do it.
Mr. Haney says that his testimony is that this permit would permit them to expand it. He says, so if you choose to do so, you could certainly expand, could you not? Answer, we could.
I think that's a legal conclusion that Mr. Haney isn't qualified to give. I think that he understood that under the argument that he was making, that there were 2,500 out there, that you could have more than that, couldn't you? And he said yes. I don't think that Mr. Heine is the authority on whether that permit allowed an expansion, that permit allowed a repair. As for back to the subject matter jurisdiction, Mr. Abrask argued to you that they went to the wrong body and they used the wrong pleading, but they got there in 30 days, so that's good enough. I submit that is so contrary to all the law from this court. In two cases written by Justice Sabers, approximately 12 years apart, about whether the Department of Labor got notice, when everyone agrees that in a work comp appeal it doesn't matter if the department gets notice because they don't have an active role in the appeal. And there was a strong dissent in, I believe, in Slama that it just didn't matter, and why should we throw someone out on appeal? And if that's the law, And you have to cross the T's and dot the I's, as we did to get here today. If I had submitted the wrong document to you and maybe got in there within the 30 days and maybe stopped and appealed to Presiding Judge Rush first, I don't think that I could make a credible argument to you that since I got here in the 30 days, it was all right. The law has always been that you have to follow all the procedural appellate requirements or you're dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. And I don't believe I have any more unless there are further questions from the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Court will be in recess.